All right, everybody, welcome back to the Brotherhood Academy Radio podcast. This is episode 007, and this is going to be a good episode because I got Paul back here. It's not a solo episode like the last few. And we have a special guest with us today. He's a very, very special guest. Nick Hamill from the South Berwick, Maine Fire Department. Lieutenant Nick Hamill, absolutely. So let's start off with some announcements. I just want to remind everybody to make sure you check out our social media accounts on Facebook, Brotherhood Academy Radio. Check that out, like it. We have a page and a group, and on the group you can join that, and it's a good place to do some interacting and ask some questions and talk with other members. So that's growing daily. So check that out. All right, you ready to kick this off, Paul?
Ready. Ready.
Enjoy the show. They've been friends since they were in diapers, so they have the same heart to be. Volunteer firefighters, fighting for a dying breed.
What do you think of that, Hamill?
Sounds good.
That was custom made.
Custom.
Totally custom.
You guys are so fancy.
We try to be fancy, although we're very primitive here because we're running off of two iPhones, recording onto one, and that sound comes off the other. But we'll get there. So, welcome to the show, Nick. We haven't seen you in a while. I think the last time I hung out with you and had a beer with you was in North Conway.
Yeah, that was a while ago.
Yeah, back in what, May? May, something like that?
Yeah, something
April,
like that.
May. We're having a beer at some dispatcher conference.
Yeah.
A bunch of radio nerds and dispatcher nerds. And
my people.
So, a lot of. So we're here, and you are a lieutenant with the South Berwick, Maine Fire Department.
I am.
And how long have you been on there?
22 years now.
22 years. Wow. That's a long time.
Yeah. Well, that counts junior time, but yeah.
Okay. All right. You count junior time like Paul does. Then.
Yep.
And it's kid time.
Yep.
Yep.
I don't have kid time, but.
37 years of counting.
There you go.
So that's what, 19 adult time.
There you go. No, that's cool, though. So what got you into South Berwick?
So I'm not a, wasn't born into it or bred into it. Had some friends in high school that were on the department, were kind of family, entwined in the department, and was always kind of interested. And when I get turned 15, I joined up.
Awesome. So they got an Explorer program over there, right?
Yeah, junior program.
Yep. We used to have one of those.
Yep.
And it did good because it got all of us into it as well. We went through the same deal. So that's great. So tell us a little bit about South Berwick Fire Department, the demographics and the number of members you got, stuff like that.
Sure. So we're in southern Maine, right next to York. Around about 35, 36 members. It fluctuates anywhere from 30 to 36.
Active.
Well, total, yeah.
Okay.
Do about 400 calls a year, no EMS, so that's all strictly fire.
That's good.
Don't really have fires, but, we stay pretty busy for a small town. So
do a lot of mutual aid fires.
We do, yeah. We're lucky to be kind of strategically located close to a lot of towns,
right.
Especially towns that actually have fires. So
right.
It works out in our favor.
That's helpful. Way better than us, as half of our border is an ocean. So
yeah, the ocean doesn't burn.
And the other third of it's ours is us.
Right, well, that's true.
And we don't have fires. So.
Yeah, you are our biggest bordering mutual aid town, absolutely. So, and it takes us, 10 to 15 minutes just to get to you.
It's a 10-mile run to downtown South Berwick from York Village. So
it's longer now with 91 closed.
Well, too. Yeah, a bunch of detours. So awesome. So you guys, I wanted you on the show, and Paul agreed because you guys are crushing it with membership. I mean, I was listening on the radio the other night. You guys had a reported building fire out behind your station somewhere. I forgot the name of the road, but it was a smoke in the basement.
Yep.
Like around midnight, and your first engine sign on with six guys.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, damn.
Yeah, amazing.
It's awesome.
It's amazing.
So what is it that makes your department tick? What is it that keeps people coming back, that's keeping the morale up and people showing up?
Well, I think the biggest thing that we have an advantage on is our leadership's pretty solid. We've had a really long-term, officers and chief officers and even line officers. I mean, I'm the youngest, lieutenant.
Best looking one, too.
Well, I don't know about that, but with almost 20 years on, so
right.
That stability at the top, I think, really sets the tone, especially when the expectations are there. So we expect a lot from our guys, and they produce.
Good. Giving everybody a personal responsibility and something to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it keeps them going, and it gives them a sense of ownership, too. I think that's what we benefit from is, you know, us as officers, we're given a lot of stuff to do and projects, and when they're given to us, it's ours. We own it, you know, from the start to the end, and it gives us that ownership, which is pretty awesome. So,
and it's become part of the fabric of the department where, you know, we take pride in not getting retoned, which, you right. know, most towns around here in general are retoned a lot, you know.
Right.
Of course, that's changed with regional dispatch, but... you know,
sure.
The guys take a lot of pride in getting out the door with the big number on the truck.
Mm-hmm.
And, whether it's with six guys or even during the day with three or four guys, you know, in the bedroom town's pretty good. And then getting all the trucks out, you know, so we right. try to get, you know, the second piece, you know, if you have six guys in the first and just a driver in the second, well, it doesn't really do you any good, but you know, yeah. we try to get them all loaded, yeah. you know, so sure. most of the time, so.
Sure. Now, are you guys allowed to go direct to the scene or does everybody have to go to the station?
So predominantly to the station, we break the town up into districts. And mm-hmm. if you live in the South District or the Northern District, like where I live,
yep.
We go to the scene.
Gotcha.
If it's in our area. If right. not, we go to the station. So, like for me, if it's north end of town, I'll just go out there. And but there aren't that many of us. There mm-hmm. might be half a dozen, you right. know, have the gear with them. Everyone else is at the station.
Gotcha. We used to do that when we lived close to town, but...
Yeah, going to the station was kind of a thing that we did, the guys that were in the village close by, but now living out here on the south end of town, that's not really an option for, you know, by the time right. I get to the firehouse, everything's gone, so.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I'm 5.6 miles.
Yeah.
Oh,
from,
wow.
From the station,
oh,
so.
Oh, wow, that's a yeah. lot. Yeah. I'm 3.5, and I don't make a truck.
No, I yeah. say we, you know, we get out in, you know, under 10 minutes usually, so.
That's good.
I would never make it there. You yeah. have to get on the truck
and
that.
Yeah. And during the day, you guys have the benefit of, what is it, P. Gagnon's oil company.
Correct.
Now, yeah. how many of your guys are employed by them?
a lot.
It fluctuates to anywhere from 4 to 6, depending on the season.
Mm-hmm. So, what, did they have any relation with the fire service at all, the owners of that business, or how did that come about?
The owner... deal with the current owner that it was on the fire department for many, many years.
Okay.
And they've always been really, really supportive of the town in general and in the fire department.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our assistant chief's, you know, one of the higher up leaders at the company. And, you know, so they've always had a pretty good relationship.
Yeah, that's good. That's important in a small town where you got businesses that'll let their employees who are firefighters leave and go off duty.
Sure.
To answer the tone. So,
yeah, that's as good as gold. Now we understand that the way it works there at P. Gagnon is that the guys just drop what they're doing, go to the call, and remain on the payroll at P. Gagnon, and the town of South Berwick makes it right with the business, as far as we have been told. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm not sure of the particulars on that, but I know there's some arrangement there between the town and the company. So
that's awesome.
I know that, you know, whatever the town reimburses them doesn't, you know, even come close to covering the cost of, you know, losing
yeah.
you know, 4 or 5 workers during the day. But
yeah. Well, it's important, though, you know, in a small town, it's important for businesses to understand that kind of system needs to be in play. I mean, when you and I were first starting out, we were working together at Stonewall Kitchen.
Oh,
and
man, that was
geez,
a ball.
They, you know, back before we had responsibilities, and they let us leave for any fire, drop everything we're doing, you know, and there was one summer we were leaving how many times? Jeez.
I'd give anything to go back and do that job
that
again.
Was,
that was a lot of fun with no responsibility and...
Yeah.
It was Friday afternoon, 2:30 in the afternoon, lightning strikes,
right.
building fires, and
bye-bye.
Checking out and taking off and
yep.
going to the fire. That's
yep.
That's as good as gold right there.
Right.
Nothing wrong with that. No email on the phone, no responsibility.
That's
right,
great.
Right, yeah.
Just punch out and leave.
Right.
was
know?
It?
And it was good because it benefited the town. I mean, and I think today still we have a few people that are firefighters that work in town. You know, well, Dave Apgar. Our deputy Eve Lassard, yeah. I mean, those guys, they work right in town, and if something comes in, they're able to go. So, I mean, that's a huge help.
Yeah, it is.
We have a few guys that are, you know, off shift. You know, they might work nights or second shift, so mm-hmm. they, you know, that helps during the day, which is really where most, you know, small departments really need the help during the day.
Oh, yeah.
We struggle here with it once in
yeah,
a while, too.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to, you know, BS you and tell you we get trucks out with six guys at 11 in the morning. It doesn't happen. But, you know, we try to
yeah.
get, you know, at least three, you know, driver, officer, and a tail guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, try to get multiple trucks out.
That's awesome.
It would be unusual. Most of our trucks are rolling. Most of our people are going POV, so most
right.
of our trucks are going out with one or two guys on them. To have three guys on a truck is almost a luxury for us.
Yeah.
Because they're all showing up in POVs. I mean, that's just the way we put our stuff together.
if we had, I think if we had more stations, we could make that work a little bit better. But
yeah,
we have
would.
Such a wide western area where,
yeah.
you know, the two fire stations in town are, what, 4 miles apart from each
yep.
other, and they're both right on the seacoast. And then you go westerly, and I mean, it's 56 square miles, and your two stations are 4 miles apart from each other. So
yeah, our station's, you know, kind of in the really long rectangle shape,
mm-hmm.
and we're in one corner of the station, but most of the residential area is there, too. So,
yeah.
You know, the majority of our active guys are within, you know, within a mile, mile and a half, certainly under 2 miles from the station.
Yeah.
You know, and that allows them to get out the door that quickly.
Right, right. That's
it's nice to be that close.
Yeah, I mean, and I think the issue we have in town is all the residents around where our fire stations are high dollar,
high class residences,
you know. And
or like my parents, where they're four tenths of a mile from the firehouse. They've been there for 40-something years. So,
right.
you know, they get in while real estate was cheap.
Right.
And now that's a 5-minute walk from the ocean.
Yep.
None of us can afford to live there.
Nope.
So.
Right. Nope, certainly not. So, So, how often do you guys train in South Berwick? What's your training look like?
So, we break the guys up into companies. We have three companies. Two for the guys on probation. So, that's your, you know, year two to year 40 guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a probationary and a trainee company, which is your juniors, your trainees, your probies. The standard companies train once a month.
Okay.
We've been doing a lot more combined training, so
mm-hmm.
we'll basically have two sessions. We'll have a Sunday session and then a weeknight.
Oh, cool.
You know, in hopes of catching everybody.
Sure.
And then the, in addition to that training, the newbie group trains, independently. So they do
okay.
other courses and
gotcha.
I'm not totally sure what their, schedule's like, but it's at least once or twice a month.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, great. That's good. That's good. I wish we had two nights a week.
So
that's pretty.
That's an interesting approach, and one of the complaints we've had on our trainings is that we focus a lot on the younger newbie, mm-hmm. probationary to year two guys, and that the more experienced guys, the year two to 15 or 20 or whatever,
the
middle children are getting kind of left out because most of the training is below
yeah.
their level. They're already there. They've already accomplished that. Achieved that. And so that's an interesting approach that, you know, hence why we're here
sure.
spitballing and throwing right. out ideas and trying to figure out what's working. And I like that idea. That's
I like the
cool.
Sunday thing, too, because,
yeah.
You know, a lot of us doing shift work, you know, like myself, I'm on evening shift and I'm stuck on second shift for probably 9 months out of the year and doing a training once a week on a Thursday night. You know, I can only really make it in the summertime, you know, so I think
Sunday morning
really
drill
cool
is
way.
Pretty cool. The,
yeah.
It's you have daylight and, you know,
right.
that's...
Well, that's just it. I mean, so we historically hadn't trained during the summertime. So we'd start up, you know, September and run through to, you know, May or June. Well, you know, a weeknight in November it's dark by 5 o'clock. So.
Yeah.
So right. and nighttime training is valuable, too, but having that Sunday where you can get a little more in-depth into things and...
Yeah, take your time.
You
yeah.
know, it's typically a larger crew, so even if you are training on a weeknight, you have fewer guys to run through drills and stuff, mm-hmm. so it seems to work.
That's awesome. That's
so we did, in the past, we used to have four lieutenants, and in the past we did actually have a separate company, it was actually my company, for the intermediate guys, the 2 to 5 guys,
mm-hmm.
and we thought that really helped because... Like you said, there's a huge experience gap from your probies where every single guy is dressed in a hydrant, every
right.
single guy is pulling a line,
yeah,
every
yeah.
single guy, you know, whatever, and you're, you know, we're blessed to have a lion's share of 10-year-plus guys.
Right.
And what we found was the 2 to 5 guys kind of get lost in the mix.
Sure. They want to be engaged.
Because they go to regular company training, and, you know, we're talking up here,
mm-hmm.
you know, at a real high level. And they go to probie training, and they've been there, done that.
Right.
And that seemed to work pretty well. And really, the only reason we don't still do it is we've had mostly 5-plus guys in
yeah.
the last 3 or 4 years. So.
Gotcha. Well,
but I can foresee that, you know, if we do get another, you know, big group of 1 to 5s, we'd probably split them back up again.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Gotcha.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
That was a fun crew, too, because, you know, we go out and do training, and, you know, we're not doing the basics. But they're still learning.
Right.
You know, as someone who's doing training, that's always pretty fun. You know, it's one thing to go out with a bunch of experienced guys and you're kind of going through the motions sometimes,
right.
depending on what it is. But
well, that's how
know.
A lot of us learned. You
yeah.
know what I mean? Before we were even juniors. You know what I mean? You're watching the guys and seeing
yeah.
what they're doing.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
that's how you gain your experience, too. So awesome. So what is how's the morale over there? You got a good morale? It's strong culture?
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's been a transition year for us, definitely. Yeah. You know, we had the our chief passed away last fall, about this time last year, and he had been chief for almost 50 years. So you can imagine, you know, a long-standing.
That's definitely a culture shock.
When culture,
you gotta,
yeah.
You got to change something like that.
Nobody in the department knew the department before Chief Gorman was running the place.
Right. So, one guy in the whole station who worked under a different chief.
Wow.
So,
wow.
That's crazy.
You know, but we've made it through, and I'd say, you know, I'm proud to say that we're still running as strong as ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that brings challenges, right? Because there's a guys are sometimes a little unsure of what's going to happen. You know, they get so used to the way that things went,
right?
And there's a little bit of uncertainty in there. So,
yeah. But and firemen don't like uncertainty.
No, we don't. We like clear expectations. But Chief Roussel, the successor to Chief Gorman, has been there for a long time too. So he's a well known guy. You know, it's not like he's a guy that just popped out of the woodwork last week, so you know everybody knew what they were getting with him too. So that's the benefit, and that's probably helped you guys with your moving forward with your department. Is that you have a guy that probably had a shared vision with Chief Gorman, and he can carry on the.
Wasn't he
tradition.
His assistant chief or a deputy?
Yeah.
And he's, you know, Joe's a great guy, and we've all really kind of pitched in to help him. You know, it's a huge learning curve, especially for him. Of all the change, you know, for everybody. Certainly, he's had the biggest, and you know, we're all just trying to do our part and keep it going.
It's good. Well, it takes a team, you know. It takes the whole leadership.
Yeah, without good officers, the department doesn't run. I mean, the chief can be as good as anybody on on earth, but without a strong team backing him, that whole thing is going to come to a halt.
Yeah, absolutely. And that chief's got to be willing to let his officers, you know, his or her officers
run with things
and take ownership, and he's got to delegate.
Yeah, he's big on delegation, which has been nice, you know. And you know, Chief Gorman was old school, and he didn't delegate much, and he did a great job, and he didn't really need to. But you know, that left us with a lot of unanswered questions when with him gone and trying to figure out how things run day to day, and you know, we just take every part as we go.
Yeah,
oh, that's good.
That's great.
Firefighters are pretty resourceful people. We can figure out most things, but certainly, you know. That micromanagement thing is a tough struggle, and so delegation is both a blessing and a curse. I mean, obviously, if things are delegated properly to the right people, and you know they go getters, they can jump right in and take charge and do their thing. But if the wrong things are delegated to the wrong people, that falls flat on its face.
You got
to
find everybody's strengths and capitalize on their strengths and, you know, let them run with it. That's where we benefit too, is we have a lot of people that aren't firefighters, you know, and they come in and they have a specific skill set that they're really good at that isn't necessarily fighting fire, and we let them run with it.
Sure.
You know, and that's the key to delegating.
It's like any great, you know, leadership. You know, any great leader, they really need to find the strengths of their people and use them to build an organization. And, you know, we've done pretty well with that.
Yeah, that's great.
Do you guys find you have some non-firefighting people in your organization that do other things that, you know, behind-the-scenes type stuff that needs to get done?
Yeah, so we have someone who does basically the dispatch duties. He, you know, does all the attendance and the books, and he does actually does payroll. And a lot of the behind-the-scenes bookkeeping and stuff, runs the station during calls. And we just recently took on a couple other guys who were, you know, non-firefighter types, but to really just be there and help out.
Yeah.
You know, when one's retired, you know, and a chief from the area. And, you know, so they're just there to help out and want to be involved. And I think that's important, you know, because there are a lot of places that don't welcome non-firefighters.
Right, they look down on them, like, what are you doing here?
You know, and then, you know, they need help. So. Yeah. It's we try to believe that there's a spot for everybody. That we've been bit by that a few times.
Yeah, we have too.
Oh, we have too, definitely.
But I'd rather give it a try and have it not work out than just turn my nose up to it.
We're in agreement on that because we have a lady that is in our department that takes care of our filing and Department of Labor compliance stuff, which is huge because it's stuff that most of us.
Nobody wants to do.
Nobody wants to do it because the main department, Maine being for you guys that are not in our state or our area, Maine is an OSHA state, and the fire departments are not exempt from OSHA requirements. So we deal with the Maine Department of Labor, and the compliance regulations are what's the word I'm looking for?
Unwieldy.
It's incredible yeah. the yeah. amount of compliance stuff that they are looking for.
We have to refresh ourselves on fire extinguishers.
Yeah, and bloodborne pathogens. And, right. And anyway, the requirements are very stringent, and volunteer departments, we have a really hard time. I'm sure you guys do, too. We have a really hard time keeping up with all that paperwork and all that mandatory training and all that documentation and all that paperwork. And we have a woman that, Ellen, in our fire department that takes care of that.
Joan.
Ellen. I called her Joan by mistake one time, and the name kind of stuck.
That's how you get a nickname.
Just another nickname I've handed out over the years. But she does all that, and we have huge 3-ring binders with everything in dividers. And so when the Department of Labor comes knocking on the door, anybody can fetch that binder, and we can access the whole year's worth of required compliance paperwork. SCBA inspections, fire extinguisher inspections, fit tests, medical doctor evals for the SCBAs.
Which we benefit there, too, because we happen to have a doctor on our department.
Right, we have a department physician. But anyway, there's so much stuff that goes into that. And anyway, that was one of the things that, a little off topic.
No, not at all.
We have people in our departments that are non-fire people, because we need some people that can do other things other than going into buildings and putting fires out.
I mean, the fire department, at the end of the day, regardless of where you are, is a business. You got to run like a business.
True. Sure.
You need to manage your people like a business. Right. You need to manage your operation like a business. Yep. Customer service like a business. Right. I mean, it's all there.
Budgeting.
Every aspect of it has a root in business. And if you have a bunch of guys that are great at running into buildings but can't turn a computer on, you can be in trouble.
It takes a lot of extracurricular reading, too. I mean, a lot of guys will read these fire service leadership books and firefighting books. Well, that's all well and good and stuff, but, you know, you should dive into some other types of books and videos online to do with business as well, because you can actually relate a lot of stuff that you can take from those books and bring it right to the fire service. I mean, that's something that I would encourage a lot of people to do.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we're on the same page there. I read a lot about, you know, leadership and business and self-help, you know, development, professional development, and you can always draw a parallel from that to the fire service.
Yeah, we've gone back and forth about that quite a few times, and it's definitely a good thing to do. So,
and, you know, frankly, for senior firefighters or newer officers, that's really where they should be focusing. I mean, by the time you hit that level, you're a firefighter. You know how to put the wet stuff on the red stuff,
right?
You should be working on your professional development.
Yep.
Learning those leadership skills, because that's what's going to take you to the next level. Because
yep.
you can be the best firefighter in the world and a lousy leader.
Right.
There's a lot of them out there.
Professional development and personal development. You know, work on that positivity. Work on your home life, you know, and get that life experience. That way, you're going to succeed far further than anybody that's just running around getting all these fire classes under the belt. So nothing against fire classes. We all need those, too.
No, it's a balance. It's definitely a balance.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, one thing I wanted to bring up today is I mentioned in the intro that we've been getting people leaving messages asking questions. So I want to bring up a question. You guys had a chance to read it yesterday. I sent it to you. But there's this kid. I'll give you a little backstory. He's 19 years old. He's from Rand, West Virginia. He's a lieutenant on the Rand, West Virginia Fire Department. 19 years old.
He's a young lieutenant.
Wow.
Very young lieutenant. His name, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, but it's Rodji, R-O-D-J-I, Rodji Selden. It's like Sheldon without an H.
All right.
And I was chatting with him quite a bit yesterday on Instagram Messenger, and he explained his department, the town of Rand, get this, 1 mile long, 4 blocks deep. Figure that out.
Wow, okay.
I looked it up on Google Maps, and it's legit. It's like one side is a river, and the other side looks like a mountain or something. So 1 mile long, four blocks deep.
Wow.
It's like a Gungquit.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny. It's not. I shouldn't say funny, but I've never seen anything like that before. So his question that he wrote to me says, I have a department of probably 22 to 24 guys, and about 65% of them are old people. How do I accommodate them when it comes to training and trying to get them to participate? So I asked him a couple more questions after he asked that, and he said basically his chief is his grandfather. His grandfather, kind of like you, where daddy's the chief.
Yeah.
Grandpa's the chief.
Yeah.
And he's 76 years old. Their captain is 56 years old.
And is that dad?
It might be. I don't know. Yeah, it could be. Maybe uncle. I don't know. Who knows? And then the average age range is 50 to 75.
Wow, okay.
So it's a great question. I mean, we've had this problem before where you get a couple of the older guys that don't participate. And, you know, the very first answer I had for him, and I'm sure we could go deeper and we could find other answers, was get them to teach.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Sure. Yep. You know, he's got a couple of things going against him, right? He's the Chiefs, you know,
grandson,
relative.
Yeah.
And yep, I'm sure, yep, Paul, yep, you can speak to that.
Oh, I know all about it.
He's, you know, younger, junior to those guys by 30 years or more.
Oh, yeah, considerably. Yeah. Still looked at as
so,
a kid.
So
can't even drink.
Naturally, yeah, regardless of how well-intentioned he is,
right,
he's behind the eight ball, right? Because he's just the new kid. And sure, these guys have been here forever, and he's going to learn, you know, yeah, they got to learn, yeah, how to deal with it.
We've been doing it this way for 60 years.
Yes. So I think you're right. I think the key there is to, you know, use their experiences, draw on their experiences. And then the task for him is to figure out how to take their experiences and their knowledge, mm-hmm, and to mold that into current relative,
right,
firefighting topics.
Right.
Yeah, to go in strong, I'm the lieutenant, you'll listen to what I have to say, you will fail.
Yep.
That approach will not work for you.
Nope.
You've got to harness these guys for what they're willing to do for you, and you know, given the approach, I'm a young lieutenant. I'd like to learn from you guys. I know you guys have a lot to offer. You know,
help me help you.
Help, yes, me help you. Absolutely. Yeah. And those guys will do whatever you ask of them, so long as they're given the respect that they're senior service.
You got to remember the service. You got to,
you know,
keep
that, they put a lot of time in. They probably have a lot to offer. And you know, when I was 19 years old, I was still trying to figure out how to pull hose, so I wasn't quite ready to be in the officer's seat.
Right.
I was still trying to master my craft. So, you know, keep learning and do the best you can. Read everything you get your hands on as far as firefighting and tactics and strategies and about the business.
They're busy, though.
They're busy?
Get this. So he told me, because he asked how many fires we get a year, and I kind of laughed because I was like,
not that many.
Not that many.
Not lately.
They had 24 in their first due.
Wow.
This was last year. And 24 in their mutual aid.
Wow.
Fires.
That's a lot of fires.
Week.
But.
Just about, yeah.
Only 4 to 5 MVAs a year.
Wow.
I'll trade.
Yeah,
yeah, right.
I'll trade.
So, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
We're the exact opposite.
Yeah, no,
that's
kidding,
what I told him.
Absolutely.
I said, we're littered with MVAs all the time, you know, but we don't get very many fires. And
yeah,
most
slow
of our fires now are out of town, mutual aid. And geez, that doesn't even happen anymore, you know.
Well, it sounds like at that pace, you're going to be a very experienced firefighter in a pretty short amount of time. So
yep,
keep going, keep learning, and always keep your head on a swivel and your eyes and ears open and your mouth shut.
Yeah. Yep. Now, do you guys have outside people come in to teach?
Occasionally, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. We've done outside. We had outside people come in and do a, you know, a new vehicle construction class, new vehicle technology class.
Mm-hmm.
We had an outside instructor do a building construction, you know, modern fire behavior type class.
Sure.
Our fire association funds a lot of that. The town doesn't, so mm-hmm, we'll pay you to bring in outside instructors or send guys to outside instructors.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're kind of stuck in an echo chamber, right? Even if you do have good topics or new topics, it's still your content and it's your guys. And you need that fresh perspective.
It's the same thing over and over again, you know.
So as somebody that's taken my show on the road, so to speak, as a fire officer and fire instructor and whatnot, we have batted that around with other – I had a friend in the neighboring state that was a fire chief, and then a training officer in a couple different departments, and he would bring us, a couple of us from York, down to teach every now and again, and it would be the same stuff he would be trying to teach his own guys, but because he's an insider, you know, they kind of cast him to the side. Yeah, 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 it's the same old stuff from the same guy, and he's trying to teach us the same old thing, and we'd come down and be teaching the exact same thing, but people would be hanging on every word because we're outsiders, and,
right,
you know, their perception is that, you know, we're from outside. We probably have our stuff together, and you know, we would laugh at that you know, that mindset. But that's, it's true everywhere that, you know, we could, you know, here at my own department, I could be teaching XYZ and they hear the stuff from me all the time.
And it's very dry.
You get the eye roll.
Yeah, it's, it has a tendency to be dry,
kidding.
Whatever.
I'm just kidding. No, but, I don't think it's dry. But I stay engaged. I love your trainings.
You know, you hear the same stuff from the same guys, and because it's me, they don't pay much attention. If the same, if somebody from outside was teaching the same exact thing, they'd be hanging on every word because it's from somebody on the outside.
I get it, too. Every year when we have to do the driver training refresher PowerPoint, everybody gets all, they start to sigh and roll their eyes. And, sorry, guys, we got to do this. We got to do it.
Department of Labor, again.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Maybe I should dub that down a little bit, though. It is kind of a long PowerPoint, but.
Yeah, one thing, an idea I've had, and we haven't really acted on it yet or had really the time with everything else going on to get into it, was to come up with a kind of a secondary curriculum, an experience guide curriculum, where because the trap you get into is, and we're right there now, is we don't pull the more experienced guys into the classroom enough. And I don't want to sit there and go through a 100-slide PowerPoint from square one on whatever tactic, but there should be a quick 5-bullet point with some videos refresher to hit the high points, to hit the points that, yeah, you do it in the field, but, you know, just to give a refresher on the why, right?
Yep.
The last thing we want to do is have a bunch of guys that know what to do but don't know why we do it.
Right, right.
Yeah. And that's what you fall into.
That brings up an important point, too, is, you know, when you are getting those younger members joining up, I mean, you're getting millennials and now, what, Gen Xers, is that the next thing? And they want to know why.
Yeah.
Everything for everything.
Yeah, they're like my 4-year-old. Why?
Yeah.
Why? 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 Why?
Exactly. Yeah. They want to know why. And that's nothing. There's nothing wrong with millennials. People bash millennials and this and that. But honestly, I think they have a real good place in the fire service because, one, they want to know why. And, two, they want to make a difference in life. You know, they're going into jobs these days right out of college and they're not making a difference right away and they're getting discouraged. Well, if you want to make a difference, join the fire department. You know, but they want to know why.
Sure.
So one of the trainings we did the other night, Thursday night, was annually we do a chimney fire refresher.
Mm-hmm.
And in the past, maybe in our department, maybe like in your department, chimney fire is an operation we do multiple times a year, and we do really, really, really good at it. We're really good at it.
Yeah, you did a good job down here. You did a real good job.
Didn't mess anything up, did
no,
I?
No.
So it's, you know, some departments are strong EMS-wise, and they go to heroin overdoses, and they give out Narcan. And they do that operation daily, and they're really good at it. And it's like snap your fingers and A, B, C, D, the call goes. That's how York Village Fire does chimney fires. We're really, 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 that's one of our bread and butter operations. And, you know, because it had been passed down from the older generation. This is how we did it in years past, and this is what worked, and this is what didn't work, and that got passed down. And we evolved throughout the years, you know, finding what worked on that operation and what didn't.
It helps, too, when you're going to the same chimney every year, too.
Yeah. We used to have an annual chimney fire at different places around town. And so what we did was we wrote an SOG. We had never had an SOG on it, but we actually wrote one based on how we really operated at those incidents. So it really was more like, How do we do this, and how does what works and what doesn't? Let's write down an SOG based on how we actually operate, and then we follow that SOG to a T because that's how we've always done it.
Right.
And then we came up with, well, every year we would sit and have a chimney fire class, and we talk about this chimney and that chimney, and, you know, it was hard because it was just the older guys up there talking about chimneys and this, that, and the other, and nobody... We didn't have any pictures. It was all based on experiences, and it didn't help the younger guys because we were explaining this and explaining that. And to me, without a picture, it doesn't do much good.
A lot of younger guys are really visual learners,
right?
Too.
So we made a PowerPoint presentation, and now we run that every year. And I don't think it's terribly dry, but I mean, we do run the same presentation every year. It's an annual refresher,
yeah.
Right?
You know, this time of year because it's the beginning of chimney fire season, and
Now that you say that, we're going to have our first one tonight.
It wouldn't surprise me. And so we went through the PowerPoint the other night, and it's got pictures in it of you know, some incidents that happened here, some stuff that was stolen off the internet.
Borrowed,
procured.
Repurposed.
Yes.
Repurposed. So, you know, just, you know, photos that fit the examples being provided, and we tried to have a pretty comprehensive program on what to expect, how we operate, some of the things that we had screwed up over the years that we can do better on. And then we reviewed the chimney fire equipment that's carried on the trucks. We carry a chimney bucket and the chimney chain, which are separate pieces of equipment, and we try to have them be in the same place on all the trucks.
Right. That's important.
Consistency is important. We've tried real hard to be consistent with where equipment is carried on the trucks, and we're probably 80% of the way there.
Yeah.
But
speaking of trucks, talk about what do you guys got for trucks over there, South Berwick?
So we run two engines, a Quint and a tank truck. So we got both pumpers are, one's kind of set up for structural.
Mm-hmm.
The other one's kind of our vehicle rescue type, truck. It's not a rescue truck by any means, but
right.
Carries a tool and whatnot. Yep. And then the Quint's kind of, obviously, it's 75-foot,
yep.
Pump of water. Has our second rescue tool on it. And that's really set up for rescue stuff. It's got the Stokes basket and everything else. And then, of course, tanker.
Yep.
Is tanker.
Pretty basic tanker.
Yep. Pretty simple. We didn't do anything, crazy with any of them. They're all pretty basic trucks, nothing super fancy, but,
yeah.
Gets the job done.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about one of your trucks and your little intimate relationship you had with it last winter? Or?
I knew I wasn't going to escape without bringing that up.
I mean, I'm just curious. I mean, I was told when you're interviewing someone, be curious. So I'm curious. If you don't want to talk about it, that's cool.
No, so earlier this year was in March, middle of March, I guess. We could call out for a building fire. It's about 2 in the morning. It's actually about 4 houses down from my house. So I get up, hop in the truck, head down, get there, well before anybody else. And it's a fire burning around the chimney, like a ranch, mm-hmm. nothing major. Call in an update. Chief shows up. We do a walk around, kind of come up with a plan. And, long story short, I'm walking down the driveway just as the first two engines pulling in. And I see him coming. And typically we stay out on the street, but he was, had been directed to turn into the driveway. And I didn't hear it or didn't realize it or whatever. And before I could get out of the way, I actually got hit by the truck as it was pulling in.
Oh, boy.
He didn't see me. He had no idea.
Yeah.
And I'm 6'3", 280 pounds, but in gear. But
sure.
Didn't see me. And
hey, that's okay, though.
Yeah. I tried to jump out of the way, but there was a stone wall into the snowbank and got me between. So basically, I got hit by the officer's side body. So from the tailpipe, my boot was actually stuck between the tailpipe and the body.
Yeah.
Oh.
The rear tire, and that's about it.
Wow.
My lower leg. So
you're lucky.
Very lucky. So I kind of got up and I was dazed and confused. Didn't really know what was going on, other than my boot was missing and my pants were shredded. Then I kind of came to and I realized that, okay, I guess I'm not going in.
No,
I was waiting for the truck to get there to put pack on. And I couldn't find my mask. So I was like, whatever.
Yeah.
So I said, well, I'll adjust the hydrant. So I grabbed the valve off the back of the truck and I carry it. The hydrant's right in front of the house.
Yeah. That's
and I carry it over. The driver's, getting ready to hand jack a line. And I got the first cap off the hydrant and then the pain hit. And I was like, oh my God, I can't do this. So went to the ambulance. So
it's that adrenaline rush that makes you forget about the pain or not notice it until you start doing something.
That's no fun.
No.
So the funniest part of the whole, two things happen. So I go to the ambulance and we're getting ready to leave. And the driver actually opens the back door of the ambulance and kind of looks at me and he's like, oh, I'm so sorry. He says, how you feeling? And I go, without missing a beat, like, I just got hit by a, bleeping truck. he puts his head down. He's like, I guess I deserve that one. And then the second thing that happened was we get to the hospital and, of course they do the call in and then the call in's like, a 37-year-old male, struck by a fire engine, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
And they're like standing at the door waiting. And
and
I tell them when we pull in, I'm not going to make you guys, carry me in. So I said, I'll walk in. Are you sure? I said, no, I'll walk in. I'll be fine. So we get to the hospital, we pull up under the canopy and I can see people all crowding the doorway at the ER.
Oh boy.
And they punch the code. I walk through the door, and I hear someone in the back of the room go, oh, man, he's walking. And I'm like, sorry to disappoint you.
Yeah, right. Oh, my God. That's awesome.
Oh, man.
Oh, Jesus.
Huh. It's funny now. It wasn't really funny when it happened. But
it never is, but now you can joke.
It was eye-opening for everybody, I think, because you just you play since he kills, right?
And yeah.
I wouldn't say that, you know, it just happened.
Right.
There was no, you know, intent on anyone's part. There was really not no negligence on anyone's part. Yeah. You know, it's heat of the moment, 2 a.m, yep. and, you know, fire shooting from the roof. So.
Right, right. Yeah, that adrenaline's rushing. And that goes to show, too, that, you know, as volunteer and call guys, we're not immune to any of that.
Right.
We have just as much, you know, chance of getting hurt or even killed than any career department.
Oh, sure. You know, and especially more so on the road, right? Because,
yeah.
you know, you look at the incidents of, you know, apparatus accidents
yep.
and stuff like that, or POV accidents. And
most of it is preventable. Most of it is
almost all preventable. Of it.
It's so sad to see that stuff happen.
Yep. So.
And I think the other piece of it, too, is, you know, like I said, typically, you know, 85% of our guys don't go directly to the scene.
Right.
You know, and I'm in one of the more rural parts of town, so I have my gear with me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one of maybe half a dozen that would go directly to a scene. So, mm-hmm. you know, they're not always expecting to see people, you know, walking around.
Sure.
You know, because they get there and it might be the chief and there might be nobody, you know. So I think that kind of plays into it, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, damn. I think that's pretty much, I mean, we've got a pretty good show here recorded. I'm pretty impressed. I'm very happy to have you here. One more thing I want to ask both of you. You guys ready for trick-or-treating or what?
I'm going to work tomorrow. I don't care. Let it happen.
How about your kids, though? You got your costumes ready?
I don't know. She's got that sorted out.
Oh. We're easy this year. Jack wanted to be a fireman. So.
Oh, well, that's easy. There you go.
So that's easy. And then by default, his little brother's going to be a fireman. Well, so
perfect.
Yeah, that's we're good.
Yeah.
It's easy.
Can't beat that. Yeah.
I never want to be that guy whose kid's a fireman every year, but
yeah,
this is the first year he really got to choose what he wanted to be. So
yeah, well, that's what they.
We're going with it.
Sure.
Cool.
Sure. Yeah. Coraline's going to be a porcupine.
Huh?
So
interesting.
She's obsessed with porcupines.
All right.
You know Henry. Have you ever met Henry, the porcupine from the York? What's that called? By the mountain there on Mountain Road. The wildlife.
Center for Wildlife.
Yeah. They have a porcupine there named Henry, and he goes to all the kids' events around town. So she sees Henry all the time, and she can't quite say porcupine. It's peaky cone. So peaky cone eats bananas and sweet potatoes, and that's all we talk about. So all
right.
Now she's going to be a peaky cone, and Jen made the costume. It actually came out really good. So we're getting excited about that. We're going to hit up two towns tomorrow. We're going to do downtown Portsmouth, and then we're going to come to York. We're going to try to bang that all out in 3 hours.
Wow.
Nice.
Ambitious.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. Do you have any more you want to add? I appreciate you coming out.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. It was good.
Yeah. All right. Paul, anything?
I think it was very productive. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah. Good. So we'll plan some more stuff. I know we've got some other guests lined up. We just got to do scheduling stuff. Scheduling is very, very tough. I'd like to get Peter Humphrey on here, maybe even his brother Eric, and talk about the situation down in Lawrence.
Uh-huh.
I think that'd be a good episode to do. So, again, everybody, check out the Facebook pages and the Instagrams and all that stuff, and get on there, and please share this podcast. All right? We'll talk to you again. Thank you.